The session will start. Please take your seat. Come to the table, please. Come to the table. Sit there. Okay. Wonderful. Good afternoon, and for our remote participants, good morning, good afternoon. It depends where you are. Today, it is our second Middle East Space. You remember we did our first one in Abu Dhabi, and it apparently worked very well. That's why we decided to make this second one. And the subject or the topic that has been chosen by the community, by you, was the compliance of the data, who is data, with the GDPR. Farzana, who proposed this topic, was the pen holder of the statement. And now we have a statement. You will see it. It will be distributed. So I would like to welcome you all here and welcome our guest speaker, the first guest speaker, the CEO of ICANN, Johan Mörby. Also, I would like to welcome Thomas Rickett, who will be one of those who will introduce the topic in this session. And since Johan is very busy, he has only 15 minutes, I will directly give him the floor after giving the floor to Baher, who will make the introduction or the opening addresses. Thank you.
Thank you, Tijani. This is Baher Asmat, for the record. I'm with ICANN Global Stakeholder Engagement team. Welcome to the second Middle East Space in Puerto Rico. I'm very pleased to see this practice of the Middle East Space continue. We started in Abu Dhabi, and I'm particularly pleased with the energy of the Middle East Strategy Working Group in taking a lead in organizing this session in a bottom-up manner. Actually, the whole process that Tijani, Farzana, and the team started to, decide on which topic to discuss and then develop, the agenda and come up with the draft statement. It all was in a multi-stakeholder and bottom-up manner, so I'm very pleased for that. And the topic today is, of course, very important, the EU General Data Protection Regulations. And I'm, glad that the Middle East community is paying attention to such important topics and to engage in such discussions at ICANN. So without further ado, I'll turn it over to Johan Mörby, President and CEO of ICANN.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I'm very happy to be here. First of all, I want to tell you something that we had this GDPR session in the, it was morning, wasn't it? And I got a question from Steve, and we're going to add that on Thursday, somewhere along the line, at the end of the public forum, we will add an hour for more of a deep dive about GDPR to be able to answer some of those questions that you also bring up in your letter. Because it seems we've done several of them, but this is not an easy exercise because it blends a 20-year-old Whois discussion with legalities. And I want to point out that anyone who says that they actually know exactly how this law is going to be enacted is probably pulling your leg because we don't know. So just to take you a step back, 6 months ago, or a little bit more than 6 months ago, 8 months ago, we started a process about GDPR. And GDPR is a law. Usually in this extent, there is sort of a negotiation of implementation of policies with ICANN, and we have processes for that. What we don't have is a process how ICANN org as an entity could be compliant with the law. That's like, I made a joke, bad one, that is like asking the community to do my taxes. I think that it's been a fantastic process in that sense that we, during a very short period of time, not only invented a process, we opened up for instance, we got your input. The first thing we did was the sort of foundation, which is the user cases we did, and we asked you for. We hired an external law firm, Hamilton, that you can also ask your questions through. And we got a lot of input from different parts of the community about what they saw. And that was important because one of the things we did during that process is to sort of make the case for the Whois system. So we've gone through this line where we started out, and I said that I think that the GDPR will have an effect on the Whois system. Check. We went out and said that ICANN will be some sort of data controller. Check. We received communications from the DPAs saying that they inclined to us to what we call a tiered access model. Check. We presented three different models and asked for comments from the community and received several. And we took that into account and presented a hybrid solution. Here's the catch, and this is a real catch. Legally, I have to make a decision. There is no way I can avoid to make that decision at one point in time because ICANN org, as an entity, has to be compliant with the law. So right now, all the discussions we are having is slightly theoretical because we don't know what the DPAs will say. And that's the sort of strange thing with this law as well because it's a two-sided law. It's a behavioral law. It's about how we behave. And I'm going to repeat one of my jokes because I've said it so far. I still think it's fun. I call it the mother-in-law because when I was a teenager and my mother said that I can go out if I behaved, I did behave. And apparently she had a different view on my behavior than I did. And that's really the content of the law. It wants to train us to think differently about privacy versus the need for information. So we've been very careful of stating that we know exactly how the end is going to be. But thanks to the ICANN community, and I say very much thank you for the ICANN community, we arrived at a model, which is funny enough, nobody agrees with. And it's sort of, I don't know if you saw the presentation this morning, you can debate if we've done everything wrong, if we put everything in the right place, but it shows there are diversion within the community. But one thing that the community actually agreed upon, which I think I know has been discussed for a long time, is the tiered access model. There's going to be shown something, and then it's going to be some kind of wall, and then someone will access that information. And that is actually 80% of the question. That's 80% of the whole riddle of this discussion. And I give back to the community to say that that you agreed on that actually makes the legal case. Now we're in the situation which we talked about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and we reached that point. Someone actually said to me a couple of weeks ago that one of the things that you have to understand, Jörn, is that when you go out and you say you have a plan, and then you actually do what you said you're going to do, that surprises many people within ICANN. And we have surprised. We have followed strictly what we said we're going to do, more or less on the time we said so. Now, we're still uncertain. Because we need to get from the DPAs of Europe some sort of knowledge how they're going to use the law after the law is enacted. Otherwise, that would lead to a fragmented Whois. Remember, my role is not to judge between the different sides. I have two role sets. One of them are the policies that are set by the ICANN community, which you see in the contracted obligations we have. Unfortunately, we don't have a Whois policy. We have never done the work of balancing the right to privacy with the need of information. We don't have that document. But we have in our contractual obligations several points that says how to do things when it comes to the Whois. In a way, we actually have sorted a lot of that out during this period, but we have not reached the full consensus of it. That's why I said that we sort of, the model you're seeing is what we believe, to our understanding, what the law says, it's sort of, we distribute misery evenly. I sort of take pride in the fact that everybody, for different reasons, have different viewpoints on the model. But the truth now, as I said, is that the law will be, when the law actually really starts, what's going to happen? Because one of the technical things of this is that I won't be able to enforce our contracts when we don't know the law. We don't have a process for that. There's no policy that covers it. So if the DPAs, and we have a good conversation with them, really good conversations with them, and I'm really respectful of the work they're doing. But if we can't get enough clearance from them before the end of May, we will see a fragmented internet, who is. Because there is no way I can force them, the contracted parties, to fulfill the obligations set in the contracts. Which means that we can't ask them because it will be legal uncertainty. And for ICANN org as well. So that will increase the fragmentation of it. So this meeting is important, and the discussion you're having are important. But remember that some of the questions you raised to me is now time to raise to the DPAs. So what we've done, I don't know if you read the cookbook, and again, we call it a cookbook, but this is a recipe for a pizza. That cookbook also contains many of those questions that we don't have an answer to yet that comes out of what you say. And we have meetings with DPAs already booked, and we will present those things without judging if they come from one side or another side, just to make sure that we would get as firm answers as possible from the data protection authorities in Europe. The most important ones now are they, or the governments, because data protection authorities actually belongs to a government. And we are lucky to have GAC representation, governments here in this meeting as well. So don't only talk to me about what you think I'm doing wrong in the models. Also talk to your GAC representatives, and let them talk to European ones. I said today, go and hug your GAC members. We often see GAC as something different from our side. This is a vehicle for us that we can use in this sense. It's a direct connection to governments, and I think we're going to use that one. So what we're trying to achieve is to, between the rock and the hard place, I have to take into account previous decisions by the community. You have the absolute right not to have to do that when you do things for me. You have the, but I have to follow that rule book. Is this the end of this? No. There are one thing we know. If we now succeed to come up with a model approved by the DPAs, we will have a misfit between the current policies set by the community and what we from ICANN.org can enforce through our contracts. I don't think that that's a very good situation. So what we need to do on the other side of that, or actually what you need to do, is to go back in the policy-making process and further the discussion in the sort of light of the GDPR. Because the GDPR is the first time ever, I know of, that legislation has a direct effect on our ability to make policies. And I think that we can't have a misfit between the policies I can enforce and what is decided by the community. And really to have that discussion about the balance between the right to privacy and the need for information. But it's not over there yet. There are many countries around the world that is now looking into different GDPR solutions. I see a trend of this, not because I think people are bad or evil. I think it's because elected politicians have realized that the internet is here to stay and has an effect on society. For good and for bad. And what they do then is they look into the things that doesn't work. And they try to figure out a way, through their powers, which is legislative proposals, to do something about it. That's what we're seeing. That's why we see so many new proposals about GDPR. In Europe right now, there is one piece of legislation that are discussing called the e-privacy, which is sort of the extension, not legally, but it's a sort of extension of the GDPR discussion. And I promise you that we will come back here fairly soon to talk about if there are implications on the e-privacy on our policy-making process. We are actually working on a document through the multi-stakeholder model where we have engaged many people around the regions around the world, where we ask them to provide us with information about potential legislation in a sort of e-privacy GDPR bracket. And as soon as we got that assembled, we're just going to publish it for you to know. Because it's a good factual base coming into the discussions. And there are proposed ones. And maybe if you're in ISOC chapters or something, that's something you would like to engage in. As ICANN is a non-political organization, we don't take sides in the discussions in the first place. One of the things that has been discussed a lot, which I therefore say, is the accreditation. If you have a tiered access model, you need to have some sort of accreditation. Our understanding so far, and I'm saying I'm very humble in this, our understanding so far is that the DPA sees ICANN as a self-accreditation model, which means that if we actually would accreditate ourselves, that would be very close to self-accreditation. That's our understanding. We could be wrong. We are asking them the question. Governments seem to trust governments, and therefore we have asked or proposed or are starting to discuss a model where the governmental advisory committee is involved, not operational. Because what we asked them to do, and I understood that there's been a lot of confusion about it, there is a paper about it, if you would like to read it, that maybe clears things out, but it says that all countries around the world make decisions about their own police forces. And they send that list through the GAC to us. Because they have the telephone numbers to the GAC, because it's actually governmental members who sits in GAC. So it's a very easy avenue for them to make sure that we get that information and we provide that to the contracted parties. The other part of this is what we try to say is that there could be other legitimate purposes for having access to the WHOIS system. And there we have asked the GAC, or starting to discuss with the GAC, that they provide what we call the code of conduct. Because there has to be a code of conduct or something that writes down why is this purpose legitimate for access to the information. And then organizations should sign up for this code of conduct, but someone outside should check the actual behavior. In intellectual property, we for instance, said that WIPO could take care of that. And I know that some people have said it changes the statute of the GAC. I look at it differently. I look at that we now have a vehicle that could help us in this. And we are not asking the GAC to be operational. That's the thing we want to do. Unfortunately, I have to leave. We have some name collision to fix. But I think if there are any questions to me, please ask them now. Thank you.
Okay, Hadia.
Hadia Minyawi for the record. So what I understand, a key element here is the balance between the legitimate interests and the rights of the subject data. So do you know how this is going to be implemented?
No. Let me expand. So ICANN.org doesn't intervene in the discussion between the balance. If I may go out of line for a second and say, this is what we should have done in the multi-stakeholder model. But for reasons I've been hearing a lot about for the last 6 months about this, we have not been able to do that. And it maybe shows how hard it is to do that balancing. I have only one task, which is between what we think is a model for compliance with the law and what is said by the community previously. These are my laws. I can't invent a new policy. I can't disregard a policy. I have to figure out this in the middle. So the balancing, that's you.
Thank you very much, Johan. Thank you especially for this presentation of the process. You presented it very well, and I think it will help us very much to understand better. For your information, it wasn't understood that you are going to the government through the GAC. I was in a session now, and I said that. They told me no. it is, they said the GAC, it is the GAC. That means that it seems that there is a document that you distributed in which it is written the GAC and not the governments through the GAC.
Communication exists when the receiver understands what you say. I think that we communicated enough. I mean, it's just that we have something we call the Government Advisory Committee, which uses the word governments in the beginning. And I'm actually looking from this from the DPA side instead. Forget the open whois. Just for a moment, say that the whois doesn't exist right now. Because we sort of compare the accreditation model to an open whois. See instead the accreditation model and another line, where one of the accreditation model to the tiered access would be due process, which means that police forces and anyone else who would like to have access to it have to go to a court. That's a model. We talked about that model as well. Here comes my problem, which may not be your problem, is that because of policies set by the community, I have to move myself along that line up to somewhere else. If you are, for instance, in civil society and you want strong rules about this, of course what you like what we call the Model 3. And that might be what the DPA says. We don't know that. If I take the Berlin paper, for example, it says that they will not trust ICANN to do accreditation. I think they state that somewhere bluntly. So that means if we want to have accreditation, and if we want to try to achieve an accreditation that is further away from the due process, where would that end? Probably within government. So that's what we come up with. But it's going to be sliding along this line, and we need to get that from the DPAs. But remember, so I know that some people think that I'm trying to take sides in it. I'm actually just trying to fulfill the policies together with the law at the same time. Not the easiest one, I admit, but that's what we're trying to do. So, and it's also in the other end of this, and I said it this morning, it doesn't stop there. What happens also is that people get access to it, have to have a contract, a statement, what they're going to use for that data. They can't just go in and use the data for whatever they want. They have to have a purpose for using that data. And therefore, they sort of get smitten by the GDPR legislation as well. And that's a very interesting concept that we're now looking into as well. We don't really have, we are already some sort of data controller, so we don't add the risk. We use some of the data by ourselves. But think about it. ICANN.org, enabled to do the work we do in Octo, have now to produce a legal course for getting data so we can do compliance. And so it's not easy for us either. But I think that someone who sits in the, for instance, or working with cybersecurity, anti-spam, also have to think about their organizations, about how they're going to get access to the data. And what they are, which responsibilities they have when they actually have the data.
Thank you, Joran. I will take one question for Joran, especially about process, because he spoke only about process. For your information, he told me that he has a lot of comments on our statement, and it is about...
I didn't say that.
You told me.
No, I didn't say that.
Anyway, but it is normal. I understand. He said there is a lot of misunderstanding. And this is normal. But it seems that he's perhaps in a hurry. He has other commitments. So if there is questions for Joran, please go ahead.
Can I just make a statement here? I fight for anyone's right to have any opinion they want. But I also hope that I can have your respect about the limitations of what I can do. And I think I personally, and some of those people know that, I actually called up people from different side of the community and asked them, provide me what you think, even if you think I'm an idiot. I didn't really say that, but probably take that from the record. But you might think that I'm an idiot, by the way. Then it's on the record.
Thank you, Joran. Any question? Okay, go ahead.
Hi, Elsa Sade for the record. I'm currently in the Executive Committee of NCOC representing the Asia-Pacific region. I just wanted to comment something very, very small that maybe, Iran, it would be important for you to, I don't know, maybe important to keep in mind for the rest of this meeting and for the future. I mean, having worked with several human rights defenders in the Gulf and the Middle East generally, and having seen the implications of surveillance and access to private data on their lives, we shouldn't forget that behind all those technical terms and all those processes, there are stories of people who are real and who can go through obscene amounts of violations because of us if we don't keep them in mind. I'll reiterate your metaphor, actually, about a motherly law or a behavioral law. We should keep in mind that my kind of motherly law, or in the Middle East generally, it could very easily be used against me, violating my very, very basic human rights through access to unneeded information. Raif Badawi, for instance, in Saudi Arabia, is lashed 1,000 times, is sentenced to lashing 1,000 times for a blog. Ahmed Mansour, who's in the UAE, and we had Abu Dhabi last time, did we mention him? He is currently being sentenced for simply speaking out loud. Nabil Rajab in Bahrain, same goes to him, tweeting online about certain issues, about freedom of expression. He's also being sentenced to 5 years in jail. Keeping them in mind, those same governments have access to info that could target so many more if we give them private information. This is public information, and there already are so many violations against them. What about if we're giving them private information? So I'll just want to highlight the importance of terminology going forward, keeping our contexts in mind and making sure that those stories that are overshadowed by the presence of governments and businesses in these spheres should be heard as well. And that's why I'm here. And I'm so happy to see other CSO representatives over here also to discuss these issues. So I just wanted to put that out there on the table.
Thank you. But you're giving me more powers than I have.
Because I know the limitations. I'm just putting it out there. Maybe you could keep it in mind going forward.
This is very, very important for me personally. I mean, I'm sometimes thinking that I can't talk. If I walk up to the mic and say, I don't want to talk in his personal capacity and not as the CEO of ICANN, you will all laugh at me. I don't have the right from you to have that discussion. What you are talking about belongs in the ICANN community in the multi-stakeholder model. I have a lot of my own opinions about this. Across this table, there are representatives for different interest groups, and I think it's important that we assemble those. I would have loved, to be honest, and I think I've said this before, there is a failure in the system where we couldn't do that balancing after 20 years of discussion. Or actually, who is pre-existed ICANN. It's been around since the birth of ICANN. I hope that I've been talking about this for such a long time. I hope now the community can come together and make that balancing between the right to privacy and the need for information. Because there are good causes. I can give you another argument. And that is when you receive a spam who leads to infection of your computer, who leads to DDoS attacks. There are things that this information is used for that actually you benefit from as well. I think there is no other place in the world that is better suited for having this conversation than within the ICANN multi-stakeholder model with all its different views. But it's important for me. And it's not because I don't want to show leadership. It's not because I don't want to be part of it. It's important that the role I have is respectful of you because you are the parliament of me. So go and change it if you want to. Thank you very much. I have to leave, unfortunately.
Okay, I would like to thank Yuan very, very much because he always come to our space. He always take the time to talk to us and to address the topics that we choose. So thank you very much again, and I hope I will say one word about the GDPR. You said in another space, in an African space, in Abu Dhabi, that the GDPR is an opportunity for ICANN. And I absolutely agree with you, because ICANN have been discussing this issue of who is data since the inception of ICANN. And we never found a consensus, because there is two main values. One is transparency, the other is privacy. And behind the transparency, there is a lot of interests. And behind the privacy, there is other interests. And those interests are very, very strong, so that the community and ICANN couldn't find a consensus. And this GDPR obliged ICANN today to find a solution before May. So it is really an opportunity, as he said. So thank you very much again, and I hope the next Middle East space you will be there also.
If you invite me,
I will.
I will come.
We will invite you.
You know that?
Sure.
We might.
You might. Thank
no,
you.
We will.
We will.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm going to give first.
And now to our second guest speaker, Mr. Shirin Chalabi, I can chair of the board. Shirin is from our region. He is from Middle East, and he always come when we invite him. So he also told me that he has very few time to spend with us, and I will give him the floor immediately.
Assalamu alaikum.
Hello, how are you? How are you doing? Last time you invited me in Abu Dhabi, I found the discussion really invigorating. As I said, it's like coming back home. This is where my roots are. So I'm always delighted to be with you, always delighted to hear that you're tackling very important issues. Because as I said last time, our voice from the Middle East has to be heard worldwide. We don't owe it just to ourselves, but we owe it to generations to come. We need to improve, particularly in the Middle East, the digital economy and the digital environment so that we all benefit from the socioeconomic growth, not for ourselves, but also, as I said, to generations to come. I haven't prepared a speech about any detailed topic. I don't know how many of you were in the opening ceremony. I probably spoke quite a lot about many topics. Happy to take questions. I know you've just heard Joran on GDPR. No point me going through the same points again. But I may give you a perspective from the board on GDPR, which might be slightly different. Not different flavor, but not a different perspective. So the board is fully supportive and 100% behind the efforts made by our CEO, by Joran and his team, and thanks really the community for all the efforts that was put into coming up to where we are now with an interim model that is in the hands of the DPAs and the community. We look at this into kind of three buckets, the interim model, the accreditation program, and the implementation mechanism. And we look at it from a risk perspective particularly. Which one has what risk profile? Which one would be accepted? Which one would be rejected? Which one will work, which one will not work. And so you've heard Joran talking about the interim model, and we know that this is, so far, is the cumulative effort of putting together many, many models. It's not going to be pleasing everybody. We believe that there are still five main differences, and I know that Thomas is here. He is here, and I heard you this morning in the discussion. So it is a very, very difficult situation. I mean, it's not that easy, right? And you're not going to have the perfect solution ever. So I think the board is very, very happy and pleased with progress. We are hoping that the DPAs will provide guidance because that obviously will be in everybody's interest if they did so. In terms of the accreditation program, you know that there are discussions that are taking place with the GAC, and I heard also Thomas saying if you did that, you would change the role of the GAC and so on and so forth. So I hear everything you say about the topic. it is clear that it is unlikely that by the 26th of May, this is a personal view, that you're going to have a full, even with the GAC, a full system in place. So if the DPAs provide guidance, we will need to have some interim accreditation model in place. Then you come down to enforcement or implementation. I don't like using the word enforcement. And there are different routes we can go. And we haven't really made up our mind and discussed because we're waiting to see what's happening. But there are various routes. One of them is through interim policies or interim specifications. As you know, the contract with the contracted parties allows us to make some temporary policies. These can only last for 3 months and can be renewed 3 times. But I believe at the end maybe it can be extended. Another one will be a waiver program, not through policies but through a different mechanism. So there are various things, and there are risks associated with each one of them. But we're not there yet. We're waiting the evolution of what's happening with the DPAs, and that's quite important. So this is where we stand. Nothing is straightforward. Nothing is guaranteed. There's a lot of risks. Really a lot of risk in everything we do, and we sincerely hope that the DPAs will step up to the mark and provide guidance. I mean, that will be, frankly, the best thing for all concerned, and then we at least we know where we stand, and we can move forward, and we know there are differences, and we have to work through resolving differences together. And I said this morning that there are massive challenges ahead of us all, and we have to work the board, community, I can work together as a team, and that's the only way we're going to overcome our challenges. There's no other way in my mind. So I'm going to stop here and then maybe take a couple of questions.
Thank you very much, Shirin. You answered, or you told Thomas when he spoke about the GAC. He told, no, it's not the GAC, it's governments, government. Through the GAC.
Yeah.
But it seems that it is not clear for everyone, and it seems that even your documents are not clear enough about that. Anyway, so if you have any question to Shirin, he has also a very few time. Please, Nadira.
Yeah. Nadira Arash, NAMCOM member. Anyway, I will be away from the GDPR and its internal model, but I'm picking on the one word.
Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah. away from the details, but I'm picking one word about the differences on this model on ICANN.org offices in Europe. In contrast to the rest of the world, how that will be affected?
I'm really not sure I understand the question. And sorry, are you talking about ICANN internal systems?
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's a separate track from the WHOIS track, and yeah. Joran, again, has his team. They're all working on that totally separately. Did he not address this with you? I don't know the details, to be honest with you. But we know that a lot of effort's been doing. We're getting regular updates, and we feel confident that that is not an issue for ICANN as an organization from an internal point of view rather than from a WHOIS point of view.
Thank you. Another question? Hadia.
Hadia Minyawi, for the record. My question is related to...
Sorry, Teresa Swinehart is behind me. She said she can answer on behalf of ICANN.org a little bit on that point.
Sorry. We have done an assessment with all the departments also that have touch points with the community in order to make sure that we have a good understanding of the kind of data that's being collected, doing an analysis, and then also taking the steps in order of priority to make sure that we have as much in place as possible by the time frame. So we have a very strong process underway within the organization with regards to that.
Thank you.
And our plan is to be compliant by 25th of...
To be as close to compliant as possible. There's many different moving parts, and as a result, also prioritizing the areas that require the most attention immediately. Yes.
Can I ask a follow-up of this?
I hope I can answer.
No, please. Because then there will be difference between the process or procedure or the documented in Europe, different than the offices and other in Singapore and in LA.
I'll need to check on the details and get back to you. We would obviously want to be as efficient as possible and streamlined so we don't have different systems in different places. But I would have to get back to you on the details of that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Hadia, quickly.
Hadia Minyai for the record. So my question is related to the implementation of the interim model, whatever it is. Would it be implemented globally or only to those registries or registrars that have data of European citizens? And if it can be applied that it is not going to be applied globally. That means that you will be having two models running in parallel, two different models running in parallel?
Teresa will answer this one.
Teresa.
So as you'll have seen in the document that had been posted, the grid, on that specific issue area with regards to the applicability of it, and I'm just pulling it up, the model may be applied to the European Economic Area, and it must be applied to the European Economic Area, but it may be applied globally subject to the data processing agreements between ICANN and the contracted parties. So this is still an area under discussion on the posting of the interim one, and, of course, any feedback with regards to that would be most welcome.
Thank you. Another question from Farzana.
I get to ask you.
No, you said you told me that you have a question.
I get to ask the question. So,
if you want,
great. Farzana Badi speaking. So in the corridors, when I talk to people and the people in charge of actually complying with GDPR in Europe, they say that DPAs normally don't really give guidance, and even if they give guidance, it's not something that is certain. So this insistence on listening to DPA seems to be a little bit a kind of, I don't think this will happen. And the other thing is that I don't know why ICANN does not just take a very restrictive approach for to be in compliance with GDPR and then come up with the tiered access afterwards when we have time and it will not get fined, and then we will come up with the tiered approach and everyone will be happy.
I think you were having a dialogue with Shireen, actually, the chairman of the board. So I don't know many of these discussions and comments specifically with regards to the details of the GDPR are also an opportunity during some of the public sessions. To this particular one, the model that has been put out is for discussion. It is a proposal of an approach to take to aim to be compliant with regards to the WHOIS-related aspects in GDPR. In time for the May timeframe. There's obviously still some areas that are under community discussion and some areas that we had flagged in the what we refer to as the Calzone document that are still open questions for the community and others to provide input in. So I don't want to deviate from your opportunity to also be engaging with the chairman.
Thank you, Teresa. Okay, Wafa. Not too much in the details, please.
No details. Just a clarification. We are speaking about the implementation, but I heard in the morning that this is a proposition, and it will go to the community for comments, and it will go to the PDP process. It's not why we are speaking actually about the implementation. It's not yet the stage for the interim document.
So the on the implementation area, it is only in the context of the interim model itself, not in the context of the RDS working group and the longer term policy that the community is actually discussing, and that's a policy with a big P. So that is the reference there.
Yes, because the PDP is a long process; it's community process, and we have to comply in May. So that's why there is this interim model. Okay. Yes, Christine, please.
No, I would like to make a comment for a change, not a question. And being someone that is has not been heavily involved in ICANN, but has been coming and going and watching through time as time goes by, I really am amazed to see how the ICANN community and ICANN.org is dealing with the GDPR issue, because really it's such a complex issue. It has come in a short time, I would say, relatively short time, and I know who has been discussed for so many years, but now there is a problem at hand and the community is really doing a great job, and this is just a comment. I'm sure there is solutions will come along, and I really would like to say thank you to ICANN for that really interesting comment.
Thank you for your comment. Is there any other question for Shireen? And I hope that it is not in detail. Okay, go ahead, please.
Will I can be able to comply to the May
Your
deadline?
Name, please. Your
okay,
name.
Mona Saweh from Egypt. Just a question. Will I can be able to reach to meet the deadline on May for a GDPR or not? Or do they have like a backup plan if they didn't meet the deadline?
Right.
I think everything has been said. We are waiting for guidance from the DPAs. And everything, the direction after that will be clear once we receive. My understanding is somewhere around, is it the end of March, that they say they will give some answers? Thomas, you probably know. You don't know? So somewhere around the end of March. So we should know by then. And then I'm sure that Joran will communicate to the community about which way to go after that.
Thank you. Do you have other questions? Okay, I see. Okay. No other question? Okay. Shireen?
Okay, I know this is, the GDPR is occupying everybody's mind. And Joran is the formal spokesman on behalf of ICANN and also as a board member on behalf of the board. Hence, you know, I'm a little bit reticent to get into details myself because I, you know, I think I have to respect what we agreed between us. And therefore, but you should know that we're absolutely 100% supportive of Joran and Teresa's effort and very pleased with the community's involvement. And we have to say thank you to everybody. Thank you to Thomas, to Rafi, to everybody for their involvement with that. And I think that is the strengths of our community, right? We have differences. We have, as I said this morning, even public discords. But that's fine. That's the major ingredient of our multi-stakeholder model. That's why we're so unique, and that's why we have an open system of democracy that brings everybody. And at the end, the solution takes longer for a solution, but it's going to be much more sustainable and a bigger buy-in into that. So please invite me again. Next time, I hope we'll talk about something else than GDPR. But I'm delighted and will always make time to come back to my family, put it this way. Thank you.
Shireen, I invite you to stay with us and to listen to our discussion. It is very important if you have time.
But you'll talk about GDPR.
Yeah.
I'm afraid I can't. I really can't. So thank you so much. Much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you very much, okay. Shireen. It is really appreciated that you always come to our invitation and you always, you never said no. It is not, now we are in the Middle East, but I made this same work for Africa and always I invite Shireen and always Shireen come. So thank you very much.
And will always come.
Thank you very thank much. You. Thank you for your time.
Okay.
And thank you.
Salamat.
Now to the work.
How is it, you know?
Okay, so first of all, we will make a short introduction of the topic, and we invited for that two persons. One is not invited, he's a part of the house. But the invited one is Thomas Rickett, who is a director of names and numbers from the ECHO. ECHO is a law, I think, company.
It's an Internet Industry Association.
That's it. And Thomas is very knowledgeable about GDPR, and I think he is the most one who speak up about this this issue, this topic. So we invited him, and he will first introduce the topic from his perspective. Excuse me.
Thanks very much, Tijani. I guess for me the biggest challenge is not GDPR, but making a statement limited to 5 minutes on this topic. Thank you so much for the invitation to come to this event. I think Stephanie Perrin made a very important statement this morning by saying that it is unfortunate that we have to discuss a European law. We should rather talk about human rights. And I think that this helps us to put things into perspective because we have two different interests at both ends of the spectrum. There are the interests of the data subject, their personal data, their lives being at risk in case they're doing something that violates local laws or where they are operating in undemocratic environments. And then you have the interests of law enforcement, the security industry, and others who want access to WHOIS database in order to fulfill their mission. Both of them are right. And who could be against saving children or preventing phishing attacks and something like that? But I think what we need to do is try to be compliant with applicable laws. And GDPR seems to be the law amongst the privacy laws that are either existing or emerging around the in many, many countries that seems to be amongst the strictest. So if you are compliant with GDPR, you are most likely compliant with many, many other privacy laws around the world. So we have the issue that there is a system that was open for many, many years, and everybody took for granted that it would remain to be open. Although data protection authorities have said for many, many years that the system as currently offered is illegal. And I will limit my comments to the WHOIS part of GDPR, and certainly GDPR is a far broader topic, so we would need to talk about what is collected in the first place, what data is escrowed, what is the role of the emergency backend operator who can get access to data, and all that. But let me talk only about WHOIS for the next few minutes. And while there is a lot of progress in ICANN's proposed interim model and the cookbook, this document is still very patchy because it basically just has some headings in there, and the expectation of ICANN seems to be that they sent this to the DPAs and they will fill in the blanks. And I think that this expectation is going to be disappointed because the DPAs will not do the homework of ICANN, of the contracted parties as data controllers. And this is something where I think we all need to work with ICANN in order to inform ICANN to come up with a model with a revised version of the cookbook that has more details in it than it currently has. And again, let me say this, let me make this abundantly clear. The cookbook is huge improvement to what we saw earlier. There are a lot of very good things in it. And when Joran said that everyone was unhappy with it, I'm not amongst those. I praised ICANN for what they've done. But there's more work to be done. To illustrate this, everyone talks about gated access. Everyone talks about legitimate interests. But they're throwing everything into one big bucket of accredited users that would get access to data that is behind this firewall or behind this gate. But we need to take a very nuanced view at this. So we have, for example, trademark lawyers or others who want to check whether the criteria for URS or UDRP proceedings are present. And that needs to be looked at completely differently than if law enforcement wants to get access to data. And then yet we need to make a distinction between European law enforcement authorities, which have another legal basis, as non-European law enforcement authorities. Then we have the trademark community. What data can they get access to and on what legal basis? Then we have the request for bulk access, reverse lookups, lookups of historical WHOIS data, or as we used to call it, who was, right? So that data, that still needs to be looked at differently. Then we have the security industry that needs that data for their investigations. And to be quite honest, a lot of governments are relying on private organizations' intelligence for their own intelligence services. So as you can see, we have a lot of WHOIS customers that want the data for different purposes, and everybody's just talking about the purposes and why WHOIS is such a great resource. But as the European Commission has pointed out in their recent communication, you need not only a purpose, but also a legal ground. And therefore, we need to spell out the legal rationale for who can get access to what in a very detailed manner. And there will be the need for a different rationale for the trademark industry versus law enforcement versus those who want to engage in URS or UDRP proceedings, just to give a few examples. Now, what we saw recently, and this is what makes things difficult, the Article 29 group has told ICANN what they shouldn't be doing. They said very little and very vague things about what could potentially be done. And then we have the governments, the European Commission, as well as the GAC, who are afraid that this resource of information will not be as available as previously, and they're now asking ICANN and the contracted parties to keep it as open as possible. But then they have another half sentence say, but yet we expect you to be in full compliance with GDPR and applicable national laws. But they're not telling us how it can be done and how these different interests can be reconciled. And I think we should be pushing our GAC representatives, and I think Joran is spot on in saying we should hug them. Maybe some of you don't want to go as far as hugging your GAC representatives. I might prefer inviting them for a drink or so. But we need to educate them that if they come up with these requests based on probably their law enforcement's wishes, they need to come up with legal explanations that can be used by ICANN and the community to further populate what's currently in the cookbook. And this is what we're missing. So, in summary, what we saw with ICANN's document is great progress. It's still too patchy, and we need to encourage ICANN to put more flesh to the bone with their legal advisors and based on the community input they got in order to spell out what can and what can't be done. But we also need to push the governments to offer more legal advice on what can and what can't be done. Whether the Article 29 group can be the only resource, I'm not sure. I think we should be asking the governments, because the Article 29 group are DPAs and those are independent of the government. So I think I should pause here. It's been slightly longer than 5 minutes, so thanks for bearing with me.
Thank you very much, Thomas. We want you to speak more, in fact, because it's very, very interesting what you are saying. But since we don't have limited time, I invite you to stay with us, if you don't mind, so that during the discussion you may give some lights. regarding the GDPR, Thomas, has very tough requirements regarding data collection, regarding data storage, data processing, etc., and data retention. Are you in Europe? Is there a way? Did you have an implementation plan or an implementation guide for those GDPR elements?
In fact, all the bigger contracted parties have sought legal advice, and they are working on the implementation of a post-May 25th plan. I think everyone is still hoping for ICANN to come up with an interim model that they can then use, but they're working on their own solutions. And in the absence of ICANN coming up with a profound or robust model, they will do what they think is required to be compliant. I guess there's no silver bullet solution. And I think that the answer might partially lie in what Farzaneh has said earlier. I think a lot of the players will take a more conservative approach to start with. And as we get guidance from the Article 29 group and from governments as to what can be done, then you can loosen things up. But, I mean, ideally, we would get guidance from the DPAs, and we've actually put in writing several questions to them So we hope that they are going to be responsive and help with this. Yet I'm not certain whether they will actually be as forthcoming as we hope them to be.
In fact, I wasn't speaking about the who is data. I am speaking about the GDPR, the data protection in general, because it is not only applied to the who is data.
Correct, and there are a lot of unknowns, because the GDPR has several opening clauses that can, you know, where you don't exactly know how this is going to be filled with life by the DPAs and by court rulings. But many legal advisors as well as consultancies do help companies to be compliant with their employee data, with their customer data, to make their internal systems compliant, and also to make their external systems compliant.
Thank you very much, sir. And now I will give the floor to Ferzana, who was the Middle East space person who proposed this topic, and who was also the pen holder of our statement. I will give her the floor to introduce the topic.
Thank you, Tijani. Farzan Abadi speaking. So I suggested this topic and got support on the mailing list, because not only it is being discussed at the moment in the community, but it is something that affects a privacy protection of domain name registering in Middle East. Is a very important topic that our community in the Middle East should be talking about it. And it has to go beyond the GDPR compliance. Because we want the privacy of the who is of the domain name registrants be protected. In order, unfortunately, we have a law now, and this discussion is going on. So we took the opportunity to comment on the model that ICANN provided, but also emphasize that there should be a global model and not only restricted to Europe. And so I'm not going to, I think we are late, so I'm not going to go through the whole statement. Rafiq, also a drafting team member, who's commented on the document, can read and explain if there are any unclear things. Just one emphasis that we have to get this statement out soon, because ICANN needs comments. And they have to get it pretty quickly. So we should work on it in a couple of days, just submit it. So considering that, I just pass it to...
Thank you very much, Rafiq, who was one of the most contributors in this statement. We read it. Rafiq, please.
Okay, thank you. So we, the Middle East community members participating in the Internet Corporation for assigned names and numbers, ICANN, 61 public meeting in San Juan, Puerto Rico, and attending the Middle East space session on Monday, 12 March 2018, discussed who is compliance with GDPR. The privacy of domain name registrant in who is, especially in the Middle East, has been an understudied topic at ICANN. We are glad that the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR, brings attention to this very important issue. We believe that WHOIS purpose should be in line with ICANN's mission and remain as such. This means that while access to WHOIS data should be considered, the collection of data in WHOIS should be minimized to accomplish limited and well-defined purposes that are consistent with the ICANN's mission. GDPR has a global implication and does not only affect Europe. It has opened the door for better data privacy protection and can help the ICANN community to come up with better ways to protect domain name registrants' data and also provide access to this data in accordance with ICANN mission. Hence, our community is carefully following the discussion around GDPR within the ICANN community and supports a compliance model that has a global angle and at the same time not only restricted to Europe. ICANN provided three interim models for WHOIS compliance with the GDPR, and at the time of the issuance of this statement, is offering another interim model for community input. Concerns about all the provided models so far lie in how access for non-public QoS data is going to be granted and about the possible implicability of this application. All the suggested models still allow for the collection of data to its maximum extent, and thick QoS is preserved. This raises concerns because the models might not be compliant with the GDPR. They seem not to abide by the principle of data minimization, and they might be in violation of domain name registrant privacy. Whereas the document describing the model provides its own interpretation of QoS service purposes, the legitimate existing purposes are still under discussion and need to be set by the community, and the definition of the purposes should be justified. We would like the ICANN organization and ICANN community to take into account the following issues when trying to develop policies or implement models for QoS compliance with GDPR. First, the current tiered model suggested by ICANN that allows access to registrant data do not go into details on how certification will take place. We are deeply concerned as one of the suggested models may later on evolve from the interim to permanent, and concerns raised by the community may not be fully addressed. We are therefore of the opinion that any certification model should be shaped in consultation with the whole community. Second, publicly available QoS data of registrants from the Middle East can create different challenges and devastating consequences for the registrants. This necessitates special attention and concerted work on better mechanisms of data protection. Awareness about registration privacy and proxy services is not high either, as only 20% of the domain name registrant use privacy proxy services on the whole in the Middle East, and in some countries it's lower than 10% in total. This illustrates that domain name registrants either don't know about such services or sometimes are not even aware that their information will be published publicly. Hence, we ask the ICANN organization and the ICANN community to take into consideration these concerns when discussing the tiered access. The thick QoS data in the most recently provided model is shared among three parties with no clear justification. This increases the risk of data being used for purposes other than those for which it was collected. Fourth, as the internationalized domain name, IDN, registrant, and those who do not use a primarily Latin alphabet, we believe that it's very important to consider the impact of the implementation of the translation and transliteration of the contact information on the registrant's privacy. This is important in the context of the Middle East because this region is home to a number of languages using Arabic script and hence a variety of IDNs. These languages, for example, include but are not limited to Arabic, Farsi, Urdu, Sindhi, and Pashto, among others. We would like to stress that our concerns about data protection go beyond ICANN's compliance with the GDPR regarding the QoS data. We look forward to seeing the new generation registration data services finalized with the spirit of preserving the registrant data while reducing the collected data to the minimum required by the purpose, storing the data in a single place, the registrar, and restricting public access to it. We thank you in advance for giving due consideration to those issues we have raised regarding the privacy protection of domain name registrants.
Thank you very much, Rafiq.
Should I add maybe some comments?
Yes. And okay. The first commenter on this statement will be the one who read it, Rafiq.
Okay, thanks. So I know maybe one of the first comment we will have, it's about because it's that when we drafted this, it was the time we have the three models, and we get lately the cookbook. So maybe that we should have in mind. And if we asking for change, just we acknowledge that there was kind of, that's the timing issue. But that's it.
Thank you very much. In fact, this interim model is a good evolution from the four first models proposed, which were model 1, model 2A, model 2B, and model 3. It is on all levels. It is different, and it is very very good evolution, I mean, but we still have problems. And I will not start by giving my opinion. I will ask you to discuss this statement. Who wants to start? Yes, Abdelmenam.
Abdelmenam, for the record, the statement number 3. If I may understand you well, you mean by SIC, who is this is the SIC registry? Am I right? Most of Africa have SIN registry rather than SIC registry. So how do GDPR will control that?
Let me explain what is SIC, who is, and SIN,
yeah.
Who is.
SIC registry means 3R model. SIC who is means there are 3 parties. Registrant, registrar,
no, no, no.
Registry.
No. So what's that? It is about the content of the data and the number of data, in fact. At certain moment in ICANN, I told you that we was discussing this who is data since the inception of ICANN. And we tried to find a consensus among the community, and we never managed to do that. Because, as I told you, the interests are really different, and there is a strong interest in both sides. So, at a certain moment, we got a slight evolution, and we managed to define two types of WHOIS data, the thin WHOIS and the thick WHOIS. Thin WHOIS means all the data we are collecting now. Thin WHOIS, it's a smaller amount of data. And at this time, it was decided that the registry will get only the thin WHOIS. Today, they told us that they will give the thick WHOIS to the registry, which is, in my point of view, a problem. Thank you. I have two hands. Nadira, please.
Yeah. Some point which regarding the registries, the data which collected by the country code top level the domain registries, most of them in the region, please correct me, they register with the local, nationals, some nationals. Few of these countries, like I know .ps, they are. It is open to the whole world. So in a way, some of the CCTLDs kind of, they will not be complied or affected because there is no international, no European registered on the local level. So but I don't know how we consider that part of the statement as well.
Okay, CCTLDs. We will not have a problem with CCTLDs because it is about the citizens. Not all. I am sorry, not all. Okay, but in our countries, at least, CCTLDs are about the user of the CCTLDs are our citizens. But if you are serving European people or European resident in Europe, you have to comply with GDPR. So if there are users of .ps in Europe, you have to comply with GDPR.
Exactly, continue. I do understand, but okay.
Nadia, we are really not talking about CCTLDs here because they have their own policy. They are subject to their local laws, and this is a ICANN. They do not have a contract with ICANN, so this will not affect them.
Adia?
Hadia Minyawi for the record. I wanted to go to paragraph number 4, which starts with ICANN provided 3 interim models. And I want to clarify 2 points here, from my point of view at least. Maybe it's not the point of view of others, but that's how I understand those two. So if we go to the fourth paragraph, the fourth line, the fifth line, okay? This raises concerns because the models might not be compliant with the GDPR. They seem not to abide by the principle of data minimization. And in my opinion, this sentence is there, does not seem to abide by the principle of data minimization. It's because the principle of data minimization directly links the collection of data with the purpose of collection. And though the document does provide actually purposes for the collection, what's missing is the logic or the link between the purposes and the required information. So if this rationale is there, maybe this sentence would not be there. So I think the documents, the models presented are missing the rationale, the linkage between the collection of data and the purpose.
Okay, thank you very much.
And I have the second thing, the sentence that says, and they might be in violation of domain name registrant's privacy. Again, my understanding of this part is they might be in violation of domain name registrant's privacy because, again, the interpretation of the implementation of the balance between the legitimate interests and the rights of the subject data is not there yet. So after the interpretation of this implementation is there, it might or might not be in violation of the privacy of the registrants.
I want to remind you that Rafiq just said that this statement will be changed because we have new elements. And I would like you to discuss the ideas, the principles, not the details of the text,
okay,
because this will be changed. Obviously, this will change, and I invite the drafting team to come back to this statement after this meeting and to update it according to the remark we will have and according to the details we have now with the cookbook. Yes, please.
Hadia, as I commented on the doc, this principle of data minimization, of course, is in breach, and you came with the principle of data minimization yourself, the term. And, of course, ICANN model might be in breach of this principle as it is stated, and it's not stated by me, as it is stated by the lawyers in Europe, and also Thomas in the ECHO book mentions that there might be a violation because there's no data minimization. And even when I was talking to John Jeffrey, who's here, when I asked if the data that they are going to collect is going to be in compliance, he told me we never said it's going to be in compliance. So, John, would you like to tell us a little bit?
I don't remember saying that exactly. I think that what we were pointing out is we are testing compliance by sharing the model with the DPAs. The cookbook that we published, which I think Bahir has the link to and will provide you. Yeah, it's in the room earlier. We can send it to you again. Has in attachment one the legal justifications relating to each element. Now, it can be deeper, and there can be more explanation to Thomas's point. But it's the first draft of the cookbook. More information can be provided. But we believe that we've collected quite a lot of information about the individual data elements and the reasons why different groups are seeking those data elements to be part of the public who is and part of the collection. So I think that in just listening, I'm sorry I came late, but I heard some of the dialogue, and I think it's a little too soon to make presumptions that there is no analysis relating to the retention of the data or the use of the data. And in fact, many groups in the community are still providing us with information that will become part of that cookbook and that will become the formal analysis that's provided at the end of the process. We have submitted the current version of the interim model as well as the cookbook to the DPAs, along with the questions where there are divergent points within the community, so that the DPAs can help us weigh in on that. So in questions like publication of registrant email address and these different elements, we're seeking the input of the DPAs and helping us understand, is that something that should be included short of an accreditation model, after an accreditation model, accordingly?
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much, John Jeffrey. I'd like to frame this debate a little bit. You know that who read the GDPR?
Like the whole
okay.
Yeah.
At mean who read something from the GDPR. Because we are, okay, very good. So the GDPR is about data, personal data. So everything about personal data is inside the GDPR. The collection of the data, the storage of the data, the processing, and the retention. So to collect data, you need a purpose. You cannot collect data more than it is needed by your purpose. So the definition of purpose is already a problem in my point of view, because we didn't start by define the purpose. Some people tell me it is already in the bylaws. I don't know, but I don't understand that like this. So we need a purpose to collect the data. And then when data are collected, before they are collected, you need the consent of the data holder. And if you don't have this consent, you cannot, you are not allowed to collect data. Now to the processing, it is very detailed that you cannot process data of people if they don't accept it, and they say that if the purpose of the collection of this data is not valid anyway, you don't have to use this data at all. You are not allowed to use it. I don't know why the retention time is the registration plus 2 years. I don't know why, since we are not allowed to use this data.
That explanation is in attachment 2 to the retention. Look at the details of the cookbook. We've tried to provide justifications for those elements, and we've asked the DPAs to weigh in on whether the purposes that have been shown through the community dialogue are sufficient.
Thank you. Thomas, you want to...
Yeah. Well, I think we can't get that into the Adobe room quickly, but if you want to, you can easily Google the GDPR, the regulation, and I would recommend that you look at Articles 5 and 6. Who speak about fairness of processing in Article 6 spells out all the legal grounds applicable. So you have a limited catalog of legal grounds for processing. One is consent. So you can process data if you have the user's consent, but it needs to be informed consent, and this consent can be withdrawn at any time. So that's 6.1a. Then you have processing to perform the contract. Where you need data to perform a contract, you don't need the customer's the data subject's consent, right? So if I run an online bookstore and you order a book with me, then certainly I need to know your name and the shipping address. But once this purpose of sending you the book is fulfilled, then I might not be entitled to keep the data for any longer, right? But there might be, you know, bookkeeping requirements under tax laws that require me to keep the invoice, right? But there is a limited purpose for keeping the shipping address, for example. Then you can process data to fulfill a legal obligation. So if I get a subpoena, I can pass on certain data to law enforcement to fulfill a legal obligation stemming from the law that entitles law enforcement. Then we have data processed for vital interests of data subjects. That's not too relevant here. Data processing in the public interest, that's for those who are vested with performing a public function. And data processing based on legitimate rights. And that's what we're discussing most here. And in fact, every processing, every step of the processing, and processing is collection, transfer, disclosure, modification, erasure, all those make processing activities. So basically you need a purpose plus a legal ground for each step of the processing, right? And therefore you can start, you know, going through that exercise and look at what does the registrar need to register a domain name? And if you need that data to to register a domain name, that's covered by fulfilling the contract, performing the contract. You have a legal obligation, a legal ground, plus you have a purpose, i.e. Registering the domain name, you're good to go. But the data subjects might not expect their data to be publicized in Whois, right? So that might be a surprising clause, and therefore that might not be covered. But there might be overwhelming interest of law enforcement and others to have that data publicized, and that could constitute a legitimate interest. But then you need to start balancing the rights of the data subjects against the rights of those who claim to have a legitimate interest. And that's, I guess, the biggest challenge in all of this, and that's where we need the governments and the DPA's help. You know, so sorry for taking too long, but you know, these are some basic mechanisms that you need to run through. So I recommend looking at Article 5 and 6. That's telling a lot.
Thank you, Thomas. John Jeffrey.
And I think you want to read those beside what we're presenting in the model or what Thomas has presented in ECHO. It provides a very good explanation of how those data elements are used. For example, when we started the discussions with the DPAs, some in the community believed that ICANN held a great big database of all of this information and was the sole controller of the information. But in fact, ICANN's use, for example, is only for a limited set of purposes, which do fulfill sections of our contractual arrangements with the registrars and registries, such as the retention of data for escrow, the transfer of information between the registrars and the registries, the right for us to audit under the contract to make sure that the data is sufficient for the purposes under Whois and under our contractual purposes. The legitimate uses are a big question and a challenge. But one of the things I would implore you to do is not just make assumptions based on the law or based on other people's summaries of it, but actually go into the details and look at what we provided in the attachments, which is references to the specific laws, the data elements aligned to those. And I think, you know, we could provide more information. We will continue to improve that information, but I think you'll find a wealth of information there, some of which some of us have been shortcutting in the discussions about what's there and not there.
Thank you, Jean-Jeffrey. We are running out of time. If there is not another intervention, I would like to say two words about the model. Collecting the thick Whois and storing it in four places, in the registrar, the registry, the escrow agent, and ICANN. And then we say it is not public. The linkage is very easy.
Important clarification. The fourth one is not true. ICANN does not store the data.
Okay, three places. And it's not a problem. But already... I don't understand why we are collecting as much data as the quiz we have now. And second point, why we have to pass all those data through to the other elements. This is the data minimization. I don't see it if we continue to do that. And another very important point, which is the self-accreditation. This is something that, in my point of view, couldn't be accepted, because self-accreditation, everything will be public. It will be very easy to accredit himself or itself to access to data. So I think that the accreditation models is now, or accreditation process is now under discussion, and I think it is one of the most controversial points, perhaps, in this discussion.
Just quickly, also on self-accreditation, ICANN's model agrees with what you just said. We do not agree that there should be a self-accreditation model, and I think we've been crisp on that. On the accreditation model, the more formalized accreditation model, we think that's how you have to formalize a code of conduct, a set of rules around it, so that parties that do have a legitimate interest to access the non-public Whois have to go through a set of gates and requirements and act a certain way with that data in order to be compliant with the law.
Thank you very much, John Jeffrey. Farzana, do you have final words?
Yes. So for the accreditation, I don't know if we want to update this to also comment on the accreditation, but my personal view on the accreditation is that, yes, GAC can be responsible for coming up with the law enforcement agency list, but to be honest, for the other top matters, no. And that is a compromise. I'm compromising here because, as I told you and others, some governments, law enforcement agencies, not to protect their citizen, it is to harm their citizen. And I'm not going to put that in that statement because it's not going to reach consensus. But so this is a compromise that I think we should. So for law enforcement agencies, they can come up with a list, but then for the rest, it has to be with the consultation with the community.
Thank you. The public forum is we start now, so we have to end the session. I will give the floor to Christine for final words.
No, really, very quickly. I'm just. I thought we were going to discuss more of the statement because there are things that were not clear. But I would think that point number four might need to be reconsidered. I really don't understand how can translation and transliteration has anything to do with the privacy. Thank you.
I invite you all to integrate the drafting team because this statement will be rewritten. And please, Christine, come to the drafting team and help us to do so. So I'd like to thank you all for this discussion. I want especially thank Thomas Rickett, Jean Jeffrey, and Teresa, who stay with us till now. Thank you very much for your time. And I hope that this session was helpful for you to perhaps better understand, perhaps better, see better what will happen in the future. Because I myself, I don't know what will happen in the future. It will be in May, and it is very difficult. Thank you all. This session is now adjourned.